This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for May the 6th, 2022. Hello. And welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending May the 6th, edited this week by Sue Gannaway and Jane Thomas. Reading today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Paul Newman.
Hello.
And Frieda Bates.
Hello.
And I am Noel Thorpe Tracy. The headlines today are Vintage Buses Take Over City Centre, Park Campaigners Start Legal Action, and Council Slammed Over Future of King's Walk. So, may we have the first story, please, Heather.
Vintage buses take over the city centre. Vintage buses were seen in Winchester city centre on Bank Holiday Monday with the return of their running days. The Friends of King Alfred Buses organised the gathering in the Broadway with services travelling to Twyford, Stanmore, Sparshot, Mourne Hill, Crawley and Sutton Scotney, among others. James Freeman, chair of Friends of King Alfred Buses, said, "Today has gone very well. The weather is a bit shadowy, but the photographers prefer that. It's the first time we've been able to have a full running day since 2019, as we lost 2020 and 2021. This year it's 100 years since the first King Alfred bus made its journey to Stanmore. All of the green buses have a story to tell. It's almost 50 years since the buses ceased to run in the city in 1973. Bus enthusiasts Les Smith, Colin Cranham and Trevor Hiles said they've been to every King Alfred running day and enjoyed taking photos of the buses. And Les said, "Buses are a very important part of my life." And there's a photograph of a proud driver outside a old-fashioned green bus I remember from my youth.
Thank you. Paul.
Park campaigners start legal action. Campaigners have confirmed they are pressing ahead with legal action over the disposal of River Park Liver Centre to Southampton University. The Friends of River Park is set to challenge the City Council over its plan to transfer the empty sports centre and some of the surrounding land, including part of the car park, skate park and indoor bowls club. Councillors on the Liberal Democrat-controlled authority agreed to dispose of the land in March, but without a formal public consultation. The Friends dispute council assurances that it will be able to retain control of the way the land is developed, the fear being that a large area of valuable public amenity land would be lost to a private institution. It wrote to the City Council on Friday, informing that it will apply for a High Court judicial review. The Friends say the Council has acted unlawfully. They argue that by agreeing to lease the public amenity land, a Council has committed itself to the grant of a 150-year lease which it is powerless to stop. The new campaign group says the centre is on land held in trust to the people of Winchester and is also concerned that once the statutory trust is broken, this sets a precedent for the rest of River Park. What's more, the area in question is almost one-fifth of the total extent of the park, and it includes most of the only car park available for users of the park, the cricket pitches, the tennis courts and the artificial pitch, as well as the bowls club and skate park. Quotation, "There is absolutely no provision for community facilities in the draft lease to the university, and what's more, there is a 35-year exclusion clause, which means that only tertiary education is permitted. Also, and it's said that the university wants to provide performance and exhibition space, library facilities and a cafe. Perhaps people should remember these facilities have all formed part of the existing School of Art campus for years, but are not available to the public." Friends of River Park is challenging the legality of this proposal and says it welcomes the support of people who feel that they have been shortchanged by a council administration which doesn't listen to their views, acts in a high-handed and undemocratic fashion, and appears to lack civic or moral accountability in regard to the residents of Winchester. Consultation after the event is like shutting the door after the horse is bolted. This is undemocratic and simply unacceptable, and is far from the first time that residents' views have been ignored. It has 14 days to reply to the Friends letter, in which the council is invited to agree to rescind the decision and pay the costs of the action. In a statement, the council replied, "The council has received a plea application letter in respect of a decision made at Cabinet on March the 9th. The council will always seek to constructively engage with this process, and no application for judicial review has been made at this time. The extent of land quoted is incorrect in the article, and the decision made by Cabinet does not include the cricket pitches, tennis courts and artificial pitch. Specific arrangements have been made in respect of the skate park on Bowls Club, and provision for car park remains for users of the park."
Now, Frieda.
Council slammed over future of King's Walk. The owners of a Winchester shop fighting eviction have labelled the City Council disgraceful after learning a permanent replacement has yet to be found, despite civic chiefs pushing ahead with the move. Barbara Cooper and Alistair Day of Sunflower Emporium in King's Walk were enraged when they discovered council officers were considering pop-up options to avoid the units, which they've occupied since 2017, remaining vacant once they've evicted the pair. Both Sunflower Emporium and Suki Market had previously been told they had until mid-May to leave amid the council's plan to transform King's Walk into an arts and creative hub. However, in emails obtained by Ms. Cooper and Mr. Day following a Freedom of Information request, council workers involved with the project appeared to question the decision to boot them out without a replacement having been lined up. Mr. Day said, "Reading the emails, it seems the council didn't really have a proper plan to start with. The requirements for their creative hub were made retrospectively, and yet we still comply with four of their criteria. But no one will give us any answers as to how those being allowed to stay fit into that category, or how we could adapt our business to remain where we are. The way they have handled this is not only frustrating, but totally unprofessional. The council constantly trumpets its support for local businesses and has said how all along it has been helping us with finding a new shop. But in reality, they're doing exactly the opposite. We have been met with absolute silence whenever we have tried to cooperate and find a solution with the council. In an email to colleagues, it was said, we should only chat to them about our assistance in finding new premises, as we don't want them to rely on us. We know there is little in the way of alternative suitable premises, and this is likely to be their argument for continued occupation even after June. They will have to fold their business if nothing comes up. Mr. Day then commented, we think this is personal now. It's not Melissa Jepson's place to say whether we should fold or not. And I was almost in disbelief when I read that comment. It's disgraceful. In a separate email released to the pair, Head of Programme, Verian Lyons, said the council planned to delay any further action on Sunflower Emporium and Suki Market until after Thursday's elections. Instead of intending to serve a month's notice on both shops in mid-May. Ms. Lyons also referenced a conversation with Councillor Kelsey Lerney, in which the Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management said she was willing to handle any adverse publicity surrounding the shops being left vacant, as it was a political decision to move towards creative trades. Ms. Cooper, who owns Sunflower Emporium, said, "Of the councillors behind all of this, none of them have even been in my shop. So how can they make such a life-changing decision on our behalf? This shop is mine and Alistair's life, and the voting public deserve to know how these people have treated us. The first thing I said when we received a letter to say we had been given an extension is, I bet they're just trying to keep me quiet until after the elections. And now I've been proved right. I've said all along that I'm not leaving. They'll have to take me to court to get me out, and that hasn't changed." Dawn Adey, Strategic Director for Winchester City Council, said, "We informed a number of tenants at King's Walk in August 2021 that, due to the longer-term plans for the building, their leases would not be renewed at the end of 2021. We have been in regular contact with these tenants and enabled them to remain on a short lease basis as they look to secure alternative premises."
Thank you. That concludes the headlines for this week. If you have any problems with the recording, or if you know of anyone else with sight impairment who might like to receive our free recordings, please contact Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. But do make sure that your playback box is properly plugged into the mains before you call. Excuse me. Now we will proceed with the death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, Belgarum, letter from Westminster, editorial comment, first person and the almanac, and then we will continue with items of general news. So, here are the death notices. Adams, Sue Adams, died suddenly on 15th of April 2022. Conway Jones, Mary Wynne Conway Jones, passed away peacefully at Tegfield House on Monday the 25th of April 2022, aged 88 years. Gradage, Jesse Gradage, passed away peacefully on the 26th of April, aged 91. Hines, Fergus Humphrey Frank Hines, died peacefully at home on the 18th of April, aged 85 years. Johns, Alan Johns, passed away peacefully on the 20th of April at Winchester Hospice. And Wren, Kenneth, known as Ken Wren, peacefully at home on the 16th of April 2022, aged 90. And Christian comment this week is written by Rosemary A. Baker and read by Heather.
Make do and mend. On Bank Holiday Monday, we went to lunch at my sister's house. I was struck by the fact that she had taught her young lodger to knit. She'd also been busy sewing badges on a neighbour's daughter's brownie uniform, as she couldn't sew, in return for a lemon drizzle cake. She had also taught a friend who was losing her sight to crochet. I recall winning a needlework competition at school many years ago before having to give it up to do physics, with which I struggled. But I like to think my sewing skills came in useful as a casualty officer during my early years as a doctor. I was reminded of my grandmother, and indeed also my mother, using the phrase, make do and mend. This phrase was invented in May 1941 in a campaign with a newsreel and pamphlet to introduce clothes rationing. People were encouraged to repair, reuse and reimagine their existing clothes during the Second World War when there were shortages. Coupons were issued, 66 a year per person, to make sure everyone had a fair share of what resources there were available for making or buying new clothes at the time when resources were scarce. There were also evening classes. This theme seems very appropriate to our times. Many are struggling to make ends meet with the huge recent rises in the cost of living, affecting energy and food bills. In fact, now that I think about it, there are quite a lot of topical television programmes based on this theme. The Repair Shop, The Great British Sewing Bee, the latter with its transformation project. There are also several programmes about survival in inhospitable environments. Although we're unlikely to have to endure such places, it is a reminder that skills we scarcely use or may not have learnt can be life-saving. The ability to darn enables us to weave grasses or palm fronds, to build shelters and to make protective clothing and footwear, not to mention fishing traps. The Bible and Christian teaching do not mention make, do and mend, but there is perhaps a similar concept called make all things new. There are references both in the Old Testament and the New. This is mentioned several times in the book of Isaiah, and then in the second letter to the Corinthians and in the book of Revelation. It's a concept that is appropriate following Easter, when Christians rejoice that Christ is risen, and those who follow him and believe in him have the opportunity for new life. The Roman Catholic priest Henri Nouwen has written about this in his book Making All Things New. His message is that we can all be made new, no matter how broken we are.
Thank you, Heather. There are 15 letters this week, beginning with one read by Paul.
Yes, this one is entitled Short Memories, and is by former councillor Rose Byrne, who is also an active member of the criminal bar. But this is about student accommodation in Winnell. In your article about the plans for a huge new 158-bed block of student accommodation in Winnell, Chronicle April the 28th, you quote the current ward councillor up for re-election, Kathleen Becker, as saying that residents are supportive of the planning application. This is difficult to understand unless those to whom she spoke are totally unaware of the proposal to extend the University of Southampton's Winchester campus, bringing thousands of new students into the city. It seems as though the Liberal Dem administration's memory is very short, as in your October 2017 article calls for action over increasing numbers of students in Winchester. They were all saying there were too many speculative planning applications for student accommodation, giving rise to a Lib Dem notice of motion proposing a stronger planning policy to get a grip on the issue. As far as I'm aware, this proposal has simply been forgotten. The Article 4 direction, which I promoted as a then ward councillor, was a year too late, and many uncertified HMOs took over family homes around Winnell. These multiple occupancy houses cause real problems for the housing stock, and can result in poor living standards for their tenants, antisocial behaviour, disruption of established local communities, pressure on neighbourhood services, etc. Insofar as this speculative application in Winnell is concerned, it will add to a brand new student accommodation block at the Cavendish and another at Riverside Way by Prime Vidae in Moorside Road, as well as Erasmus Park, Superuni Housing and Balfour House. The word is that these flats are underoccupied and too expensive. A one-star review said of Erasmus Park, "There are so many empty rooms and the social life is zero to nil." I fear that Winnell is in danger of being overrun by these huge blocks And nobody has mentioned the Winnall Community Development Framework in any of the planning documentation I have seen. Your 2017 article is headed, Action Must Be Taken to Address the Growing Problem of Studentification Across Winchester, councillors say. Mm. They seem to have overlooked the problem in their determined pursuit of proposals for the Repark site. Rose Burns, Hyde Street, Winchester.
This is an unusual and interesting letter, and I have to warn you in advance that there are one or two Americans in it, Americanisms in it. This is from Margie Walker, née Reading, Canyonville, Oregon, USA, and it's addressed to a long-lost friend. It goes like this. To my pen pal. In the 1950s, we wrote each other. At that time, I lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Now I live in Canyonville, Oregon. I have kept your picture and, through the years, have been looking for you. Thanks to Andrew Napier at the Hampshire Chronicle, he has given me a chance to find you. I hope this letter finds you healthy and happy. I still remember the homemade candies that you made and sent to me for Christmas. Would love to have you back in my like. So, I hope you or one of your friends see this letter along with your cute picture. I have misplaced your name and address with all the moving in my life. I'm now 80 years old and you are always in my thoughts. Hope to hear from you soon. My email is maggieshotmustang@gmail.com. This picture accompanies the letter. It is a delightful photograph of a really smiling, pretty young woman, hair parted in the centre, plaits looped up either side of her face with bows. I do hope someone recognises it.
Lovely. Gertrude Walton writes a letter which is headed a physics puzzle. Circa 1995, you published my letter where I announced that I had solved the relativity paradox. The following week, you published Professor Brian Thwaite's letter, which invited me to phone him. He would put me right. When I did, he did not have the disputed equations available. Curiously, a textbook for his renowned school mathematics project mentions the case where the time in these ambiguous equations is not a dimension. At the time, international protest organisations were growing, including mathematicians. Peer-reviewed journals did not admit papers critical of relativity. And so I published a journal to give the critics a voice. It ran between 1997 to 1999 and was online from 1999 to 2019. Still puzzling the mystery why great mathematicians are blind to the ambiguity, I recently recalled why I, an undergraduate mathematics tutor at the Technische Hochschule Aachen, I apologise for my pronunciation, had abandoned studies. Physics students found geometry most difficult, while much of the new advanced stuff made all of us stupid, unable to understand what we were doing. Teaching would have the effect of nurturing uncritical rule followers, hardly an ethical career choice in 1952 Germany. Today, absurdly, there are two different types of physics: theoretical, mathematically advanced but only theory, and the rest of physics, which takes note of the theoretical equations. Now, this tragic state of affairs has come about because the foremost experts have been blinded by their increasing reliance on advanced methods. As I go back online to support my friends in the critics' organisations, it makes sense to write to you again because the dispute was first mentioned in your paper and the local connection also because Sir Brian Thwaites, then Southampton University and now living in Winchester. Gertrude Walton, Hyde Street, Hyde, Winchester.
This letter comes from somebody in West End Terrace in Winchester and relates to the earlier letter I read from Councillor Rose Burns about the studentification of parts of Winnall. It's entitled Need for Students. It came as a shock to read in the local election literature from the Conservative Party that any decision to allow Southampton University to increase its presence in Winchester, quote, threatens to overrun our city with students and destroy residential neighbourhoods. To those of us who very happily work with students in teaching or research, language of being overrun, normally reserved for marauding invaders, foreigners or vermin, comes as a shock. Even most conservatives know that all great cities of the world, bar none, enjoy enormous benefits from a vibrant student population, benefits of energy, vitality and diversity. Long may it remain so. Professor Brandon Taylor, University of Southampton and Ruskin School of Art, University of Oxford, West End Terrace, Winchester.
This letter is entitled Print Fiasco and is from Judith Martin, who lives in the Romsey Road, Winchester. Quite apart from the likely damage to democracy, with voters not able to return their delayed postal votes in time for polling day, I hope Winchester City Council has factored in the environmental cost of scrapping 17,000 poorly printed voting forms. How will that be offset? Where will it appear in the zero carbon accounting? And who pays for the reprints? What on earth happened? Did someone forget to change an ink cartridge? I remember when committee papers and other documents were printed in-house, in enormous quantity, and I don't ever recall anything being unusable because of printing quality. Are they outsourced now? Mind you, I don't remember committee papers being 400-plus pages long either. Coming not long after the fiasco, when the police were called to a polite protest in the Guildhall over democratic access, it seems something seriously dysfunctional is taking place in Winchester.
Simon Lever writes about Ukraine lesson. The children who took in the Red Squirrel Trail with the mission to secure donations for Ukraine are admirable, to say the least. Children can be insulated from troubles outside delightful Winchester. Following their learning of the trauma Ukrainian people are experiencing, their initiative is truly amazing and the amount raised extraordinary. Well done, Sophia, Noah, Josh and Harry. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
This letter is entitled Wrong Birds. Comes from Angela Weller of Tadgown. Angela being a secretary of the Winchester Music Club, incidentally. But this is to do with birds, ornithology. So whilst I enjoy looking at the Hampshire Chronicle Camera Club images, I'm saddened to see in the April 28th edition of your paper that you incorrectly identified a goldcrest as a chiff-chaff. And a coot is not a dog. Yours, Angela Ride Weber.
This letter is called Cold Comfort, and you'll soon see why. On visiting the Royal Hampshire County Hospital today, Thursday, April the 28th, I passed through the orthodontics waiting area, where I saw a notice to the effect that if one felt cold, the staff would provide a blanket. I asked the reason for this, to me, odd, if hospitable, suggestion, and was told that the area had been without heating or hot water since November. There was apparently no present date for the problem to be resolved. And that letter is from John Robinson, Springvale Road, Kingsworthy.
Mm. Mark Rowe congratulates the city. Ah, but it's the football team, really. Well done, City. On Monday, I attended the promotion playoff final between Winchester City and Bristol Manor Farm. All fans from both sides bonded well, a fantastic atmosphere, and both sides, including the teams, had a minute's silence for Bristol Manor Farm's chairman, who had passed away. It was observed with dignity. The match was fantastic. Both teams played well in front of over 1,000 fans. Winchester City came out winners 4-1, with fans celebrating from the final whistle and all through the trophy presentation. I urge football fans to watch Winchester City, both home and away, next season, as the club is a true football family. Mark Rowe, Taplin's Close, Week.
This letter concerns the Andover Road King's Barton issue. It comes from Roger Stevens from Cliffway in Compton. Mr. Akers, Chronicle Letters, March the 31st, suggests that diverting a main road through the new King's Barton development is an example of joined-up thinking. Obviously, residents of the houses and the part of the road to be closed would be pleased, but they will lose their bus service. It's not obvious how the closure will replace green space. Mm-hmm. It has to be said, however, that it is extremely difficult to determine the proposed new layout, as it seems that no maps of the whole King's Barton development are available in the public domain. It appears from the few maps that are available that the new main road will divide King's Barton in a way that will leave only one third of the development on the Harestock side, whilst two-thirds remain isolated on the countryside. The shops are on the countryside, while the pub is on the town side. I don't know where the junior school will be, but many juniors will have to make their way across that new main road in the morning rush hour. King's Barton will be sliced in half by a main road, just like so many of our old towns and villages. Not a very joined-up development at all.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of isolation of the new development could have been addressed by a couple of suitable pedestrian bridges over the existing road. Some sort of feature could have been made of them to give King's Barton a little presence and appeal. However, that is not to be. I suspect that the real reason for the fracture of King's Barton is to generate passing trade for the new shops and pub. Mm-hmm. Roger Stevens, Compton. Mm.
This letter is a final hurrah about student housing. I read your report on the above topic by Frankie Rutland, published on April the 28th. I understand all the pros and cons. I feel it would be better to see what the effects of real physical realities are already underway on the Cavendish estate and the City Council's new build on the park land around the Winnell high-rise flats. Although I saw the plans for the Cavendish estate build, I did not envisage how more imposing it really is on the area the new build for the council is right next door may have the same effect on it, the area. It seems we are building a mini Canary Wharf in Winchester. Although some people were made aware of what was going on, from my feedback, not enough locals in the affected area were. And that letter comes from Brian Pitts, Winnell Manor Road, Winnell, Winchester.
Postal scam. Michael Fielding writes, on three occasions, over 8 days, we have received courier packets from what we believe is Amazon. Their name does not appear on them, but they all carry the curved tick arrow. All three packets are addressed to someone of whom we've never heard. We understand that this is a scam, but it may not be illegal. It's a practice which we don't fully understand, used by some of Amazon's vendors who are trying to boost their online ratings by mailing items free but of little value, presumably as some sort of gift. I found it impossible to find a telephone number for Amazon or even an address to where the packets could be returned. The suggestion from the local police was to write on the packets that the recipient was unknown, ask that they be returned to the Amazon depot, and then to post them. This has been done, and I hope that they've now all been received and that some action is being taken. A figure which I think I saw on the Witch website suggested that 1 million homes might have received similar deliveries. Michael Fielding, Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
This letter is entitled Stop Complaining About Buskers, and it is from a busker, Marvin Naylor, who lives in Greenhill Road, Full Flood. Yesterday I was approached by a man who berated me, "You need to diversify your repertoire. Every time I walk by, you're playing the same Beatles and Beach Boys songs." He seemed surprised that I was quite put out by this. I informed him that, in fact, I pride myself that my repertoire, if nothing else, is diverse. I asked him if he played a musical instrument, to which he replied, unsurprisingly, no. Of course he didn't, because if he did, he'd know how long it takes to learn how to play one, and how long it takes to learn how to play a piece, particularly anything complex, which much of my finger-styled guitar repertoire is. In fact, it's taken me 12 years to build up a repertoire of almost 3 hours, and in saying that, I've worked it out that there's a 1 in 7 chance that someone will walk by while I'm playing a Beatles or Beach Boys song. There is one man who, 9 times out of 10, will suddenly appear while I'm playing a certain Eric Satie piece. In fact, it happens so unnervingly often, I'm convinced there's something paranormal going on. Yet he never complains. Buskers can have tough time out there, with no guarantee of substantial coinage, being ignored by 99% who walk by, being approached by drunks and other undesirables. And the last thing we need is someone complaining about our repertoire. And by the way, the reason we play lots of Beatles is because lots of people like them, and this equates to money in the hat. So word to anyone who walks by a busker and thinks they're always playing the same thing. Please keep it to yourself, because it won't go down well. You'll soon be out of earshot, so just grin and bear it and keep walking. Marvin B. Naylor, Greenville.
Lovely. This letter is called Poor Quality. The need for the refurbishment of Southampton Police Station was to be expected. Another Tory screw-up. That building was built to cost, not quality. The faults were known before it opened. Also, now, the Tory Police and Crime Commissioner has closed Eastleigh, Bittern, Shirley and others. What do you Tory voters expect? Accounts should not be allowed near policing and its needs. Serves you right. That's from Christine Cooper, former police support worker, Anson Drive, Sholing, Southampton.
And to end the letters section, a heartfelt letter from Anne Lloyd. Devastating. Easter Saturday was lovely and warm, so I decided to go out on my mobility scooter up Beacon Hill and then down Sailor's Lane. It's my favourite way to go. It's like a forest. Many of the trees are hundreds of years old. Imagine my horror on seeing that all the trees were gone. It was devastating. I was informed that they were cut down because of ash dieback. Well, there might have been some ash trees, but certainly not all. The hazels I loved to look at in the autumn were all gone. The squirrels used to litter the road with nutshells. I met a photographer walking down the road, and he said it was all due to money, and they were paid a lot for the wood. And there was a huge machine munching up the trees. If ash dieback is so serious, the tree that it are diseased should be selected for felling by an expert. I don't think I can go down Sailor's Lane anymore. Anne Lloyd, Pound Lane, Meonstoke.
That's all the letters. Thanks to the correspondents. You can contact the Hampshire Chronicle at any time by writing to 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL, or by phone on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. There are three items in Belgarum. An alternative look at the news, read by Paul.
First of three is Memoirs of Television Boss and Now Care Home Campaigner, with a photograph of Michael Blackstad. A personal account of a family's dementia journey, including praise for particularly wonderful carers, has been revealed in the memoirs of a retired television producer turned care home campaigner. Michael Blackstad has been helped print copies of his life story by Colton Care, who own and run the dedicated dementia care home, where his wife Tricia has been resident for the past year. The family chose St Catherine's View in Winchester after a search for a home staffed and equipped to accommodate all stages of dementia. But their overall experience of the care sector before that, particularly during the pandemic, has prompted Michael, ex-chairman of Winchester Theatre Royal, to call for fundamental changes in how people approach degenerative conditions among elderly people. Michael, who is 82 and lives with Parkinson's disease, had a successful career in television, making award-winning programmes such as Tomorrow's World and launching Television South in the 1980s. He devotes part of his memoirs to the importance of professional nursing being available in care homes so that if a resident's needs change over time, they can remain where they are. Homes which can only look after residents in the early stages of dementia are reluctant to admit that they will not be able to cope if the condition gets worse, he said. They should be clear about what they provide and not say nursing or dementia if that's not what they provide.
Mm-hmm. And now Frieda's going to read the letter from Westminster.
Oh.
Now, there were three...
Oh, I'm sorry. We go back.
Oh, sorry. So there's three. That was the first.
Oh, right.
Now, the second is about apple trees in bloom on the Leckford Waitrose farm. It is a lovely sight to see and now nearly 4 hectares of apple trees in full bloom have been captured on camera with the help of a drone. At the Waitrose farm at Leckford near Stockbridge, blossom fills 3.8 hectares of jazz apple orchards, which were planted to celebrate the farm's 90th anniversary. It will yield over 100 tonnes of the delicious fruit for consumers. These trees, which require a licence to grow, will be harvested in late October and destined solely for Waitrose stores. Originating in the orchards of New Zealand, jazz apples are now grown across the globe to ensure year-round supply worldwide. They are grown by specially selected growers under licence from the New Zealand Apple Authority. The Waitrose farm covers 2,800 acres. And the final of three articles is Sad State in Scott Garden. Now, Winchester has a number of quirky open spaces, too small really to be called parks. There's the Friary Garden off Culver Road, Joyce's Garden on Magdalen Hill that gives a superb view of the city centre and cathedral, and also Dean Garnier Garden in the inner cathedral close. And there's Scott Garden between Colebrook Street and the Weirs. Belgarum would be pleased to hear the origin of the space on which presumably at one point, like much land in the Weirs, there stood a house. The plaque says it is a memorial to Sir Leslie Scott, H.C., 1952. It is a nice little space which in the past has been spruced up by the city's Jewish community for its mitzvah day. Sadly, the bench has seen better days. It does not look like it's been vandalised, more a victim of the years. Since the photo was taken, it has been removed.
Thank you. Sorry about my muddle. Now it's Frieda reading Letter from Westminster.
This is from Flick Drummond, who is the MP for Mearn Valley, and it is a long one. Neil Parish did the decent thing when he resigned his seat after admitting he had watched adult material in the chamber of the House of Commons. Like just about everyone, I remain flabbergasted that someone would do such a thing. It was disrespectful to his constituents, to the place he was honoured to be elected to, and to those colleagues who saw him do it. This has not been the best of times for Parliament. I have zero interest in Angela Rayner's attire, and I deplore the navel-gazing that is going on. What I am interested in is the energy crisis we face, the cost of living challenge affecting people in Mearn Valley, and the war in Ukraine. It is a tiny minority in Parliament who are bringing everyone else down and into disrepute by association. It is not my experience of Parliament at all, where all I see is hard-working people from all parties desperate to improve the lives of their constituents. However, something needs to be done to lift Parliament up and to inspire confidence from the public. Having more women would certainly help. At the moment, it is a woeful 34% of MPs, and it needs to get up towards 50%. A better balance would help, as it would in any work environment. I would also welcome a better and more transparent disciplinary system that is fit for the 21st century, and clearer rules for all parties' whips to adhere to. In regards to bad behaviour from my male or female colleagues, I have nothing to report. I have the view that women who enter Parliament are strong women and should be able to call out anything they do not like. In my past, I did exactly that, and I would do so again without hesitation if I saw it going on in Parliament. My fear is for those younger staff, both male and female, and their protection. There has been progress on this point, but it's not quite there yet. I accept Parliament is a unique work environment, but it could do with more central HR control staff to have confidence in. At the moment, the MP is the employer, and if there is an accusation or dispute with their staff, there can be problems. Parliament was prorogued last week, and the government has successfully seen 19 important bills become law during the last parliamentary session. Some of these are groundbreaking, like the Environment Act, the Agriculture Act, the Nationality and Borders Act, Police, Crime, Sentencing and Courts Act, and the Nuclear Energy Financing Act. Issues like Partygate hog the headlines, but so much good work is taking place, and I fully supported the government's legislative agenda, and I am proud of it. Ministers have remained focused on getting the job done and have not yet been sidetracked. If they had, then these 19 new laws would not exist. It appears the war in Ukraine has taken a new turn, with Putin now concentrating on the east of the country. This conflict will continue for some time, but Russian forces are paying a heavy toll. My staff and I continue to work tirelessly to help obtain visas for those who want to come here to safety. To date, the government has issued over 86,000 visas to Ukrainians. That's from Flick Drummond, MP for Mearn Valley.
And now Heather has the editorial comment.
And the editor writes, "The City Council's callous indifference." Our front page story reveals something of how the Liberal Democrat-controlled City Council is currently operating. Two long-established shops are set to be evicted from King's Walk Shopping Arcade because they do not fit to the arty vibe that the council wishes to create. But using the Freedom of Information Act, the owners of one of those shops have secured emails between council officers that appear to show a rather callous indifference to their future. There is even no permanent replacement secured for one of the units, and the council will have to rely on pop-ups. The council has been rather clueless over creating an arty vibe, setting aside that both the Chinese market and the Emporium readily fit into such a designation. It reveals ignorance on how such neighbourhoods are created. They come from the bottom up. They're not imposed from the top down by council officers. King's Walk was evolving nicely before the council got involved. They should leave it alone.
And first person this week is by George Hayter, and Paul is going to read it.
Yes, and it's entitled Let the Wind Do Its Job. Neighbours had been increasingly concerned about lack of safety awareness at the manor house. Things came to a head when smoke was seen seeping from the tiled roof of this much-loved old building, and several villagers dialed 999. The first fire engine arrived promptly at the imposing gates of the manor. The fire crew hoped they might be in time to save the ancient structure, which recently and converted to flats, was similar to many other historic residences in Hampshire. The smouldering source of the smoke seemed likely to burst into flames any minute, consuming the house and possibly everyone in it. But firefighters were unable to save the manor known as Earth House. It was almost beyond belief. The residents were denying them access to the site, so firefighters were prevented from housing the smoking building. Speaking via an entry phone at the gates, firemen desperately tried to warn the occupants. Charismatic Chief Fire Officer Attenborough told residents that it would soon be too late, but they still refused to unlock the gates, saying they did not want any fire engines in their grounds. Why? The frustrated fireman wanted to know. We think fire engines are ugly, the residents insisted, chanting into the entry phone, fire engines spoil the countryside. Now, I made up that story about fire engines, but it's similar to something real happening with onshore wind farms. Although the world we know it is facing likely destruction through a global temperature rise, caused mainly by burning fossil fuels, voters and protesters here and abroad do their best to prevent construction of the most efficient devices for replacing nasty fossil fuels. In Britain and much of the world, objectors insist that wind turbines spoil the countryside. Of course, I see what they can mean. Wind turbines are huge white intruders on the English countryside. They can be seen for miles, and movement attracts the eye, so I find myself mesmerised by their rotating blades. But I ask anti-turbine thinkers to think anew. Some of us may consider wind turbines ugly, but nevertheless building more of them must remain a national priority. That is because the planet faces a climate emergency more serious, perhaps, than COVID or possibly Putin's aggression, and certainly more serious than preserving familiar vistas. Building more turbines in this country would encourage turbine construction throughout the world, as many countries admire Britain and emulate British policy. Everyone knows that burning fossil fuels adds to global warming. I don't think nuclear power is a sensible alternative, mainly because Chernobyl and other disasters show it is dangerous. Also, nuclear always turns out expensive, and its radioactive waste will be a worry for generations. During the last major threat that this country faced, invasion by Nazi Germany, our countryside was disfigured from everything from concrete bunkers to aircraft runways, and beaches were obstructed by barbed wire and tank traps. Most people back then accepted that imminent peril justified temporary disfigurement of the rural scene. Wind is probably the cheapest source of renewable energy, followed by solar power. Sometimes there is no wind, but in a few years it may become economic for underwater turbines to harvest electricity from dependable tides. For example, the 18th century Ealing Tide Mill at Totton, formerly owned by Winchester College, is one of two existing tidal mills in the UK that was built to produce flour rather than electricity. Wind turbines are utilitarian machines, but eventually people will see that they have beauty, even just because of the beautiful work they do. Rows of picturesque 17th century Dutch windmills were probably seen as ugly when they first appeared. We in Hampshire should resist the temptation to object when turbines are proposed. We should be proud of wind farms when they are completed. At our county boundaries, roadsides could even boast of the watts per head of population that Winchester wind contributes.
Lighting up times today, Friday, May the 6th, the sun will set at 8:35 p.m. Tomorrow, the sun will rise at 5:28 a.m. and set at 8:36 p.m. On Wednesday, the 11th of May, the sun will rise at 5:21 a.m. and set at 8:42 p.m. Now we have items of general news, starting with one read by Frieda.
This is one just for us. Cafe raises funds for talking newspaper. Wanston Community Cafe's sales of cake and coffee recently raised an impressive £380 for Winchester's talking newspaper. More than 60 visitors enjoyed the cakes, most of which were provided by supporters of WTN. The next cafe will be at the Victoria Hall, Sutton Scotney, 9:30 a.m. to 12 noon on Wednesday, May the 18th, when it will raise funds for Heart Wildlife Rescue, who operate a wildlife hospital in Alton. The charity provides a rescue, treatment and rehabilitation service for wildlife from all over Hampshire and surrounding counties. Heart also gives professional advice to vets, the RSPCA, and members of the public from all over the country, as well as providing talks and work experience opportunities for students. Heart now deals with over 3,000 wildlife casualties every year, but receives no statutory funding and is run entirely on donations. The cafe is cash only. Last orders 11:45 a.m. Lots of free parking. Donation to the cafe's monthly nominated charity are always welcome. Now, this is accompanied with a very, very mouth-watering photograph of these lovely ladies displaying the wonderful cakes that they have ready to sell for the Winchester Talking newspaper fundraiser, where, as I said, £380 were raised for our enterprise.
Winchester Cathedral peregrines hatch two chicks. Winnie and William, apparently, is what the peregrines are called, and there's a picture of them. They look like peregrines. The first peregrine chicks at Winchester Cathedral this year have hatched. On April the 28th, two chicks hatched under the watchful eyes of parents Winnie and William. On Winchester Cathedral's website, Keith Betton, Chair of Hampshire Ornithological Society, said Winnie and William have their first chick exactly on time. Winnie will keep them warm for the first 2 weeks, and then when they're getting bigger, she will leave them more and more. The next 6 weeks will be busy. By late May, they will be moving about the nest gully, and in June, they will take their first flights. It's an exciting time. Winchester Cathedral have two cameras set up to monitor the peregrines, and the cathedral is hosting a talk about the peregrines on June the 10th at 7 p.m. So there's a talk on June the 10th at 7 p.m. You need to visit the website, the Winchester Cathedral website, to book.
The annual Twyford Waterworks Spring Rally. Hundreds of visitors made the annual spring rally at Twyford Waterworks a success. The popular event returned to the attraction Hazley Road, Twyford, on Sunday, May the 1st and Monday, May the 2nd. The event was made possible by 40 volunteers who staffed it and saw crowds flock to it. There were steam engines on show, as well as the narrow gauge railway and vintage vehicles. Demonstrations and displays took place around the site, which has scheduled ancient monument status along with guided tours of the historic pumping station. A raffle raised money for the trust that runs the site, and staff were also on hand to show visitors around the wildlife trail. The tea room and barbecue were also doing a roaring trade. This year also saw a frequent bus service to and from Winchester as part of the Friends of King Alfred Buses running day. Vice Chair of Twyford Waterworks Trust, Matthew Feldwick, said, "We've been very busy, which is most heartening to see after all the trials and tribulations of COVID. It has been great to welcome crowds back again. The first day was a bit wet, but we still saw a great number of people. It is fantastic that people have got out and enjoyed themselves. Everyone has their own favourite part of the site. There really is something for everyone. Whether you're interested in engineering, machinery, or more interested in wildlife and nature, or the social history, most people who come here find something that interests them. Enjoying the day were friends Richard Matthews from Winchester and Daniel March from Andover, who had brought a Ruston steam tractor to the show. Daniel said, "It is a great event, being very well attended. There have been queues down the road. It is great, and we're delighted to help out at events like this." Also enjoying the day were Harriet and Terry Langridge from Fleet, who with their friends John and Ellen Ferguson. Harriet said, "It is great, been a great day out. It has changed a lot over the years, but that's one of the reasons we love coming back here year after year to see how it is evolving. The next open days are planned for Sunday, July the 3rd, Sunday, August the 7th, Sunday, September the 4th, and Sunday, October the 2nd.
Barber discovers talent for sewing. A barber who took up sewing when he was forced to close his business during lockdown is now in the process of making a three-piece suit. Frank Churcher Coleman, co-owner of Bridge Cuts in Shawford, started his sewing journey when he needed a new mask and a distraction. The 53-year-old from Winchester said, "I've always been interested in sewing, but I never had the opportunity to actually do it. I even had a sewing machine already in the loft. Then COVID hit, and I thought, why not make my own masks? I downloaded a template online and bought the fabric. Before I knew it, I had about 50 masks. Then I just kept pushing the boundaries. I made 7 pairs of shorts, which were complete non-starters. But I didn't let it stop me. When I successfully made a pair, I thought, I need a shirt now. I also wear a lot of waistcoats at work, so naturally that was my next step. I can tell you now, there were a lot of failures. It's very odd to think I started on face masks and now I'm working on a three-piece suit." Frank dedicated a lot of his lockdown time to learning this new hobby, even mastering how to do buttonholes. His next aim is to design his own patterns, and he is working on speeding up his hand-stitching skills. Frank, who is back at work at the salon in Station Terrace, has been impressing his customers with his newfound skill, and he is encouraging others to find a hobby that they can turn into a passion. He said, "My other half is constantly moaning that I'm always in the sewing room, but I can't help myself. I'm always trying to develop my skills one way or another. In this distraction, I found my passion, and it kept me sane during the months we were locked away from work and loved ones. It helped me worry less about money too. All I can say is, if anyone feels like having a go at something new, just do it. It doesn't matter if it's cooking, learning the guitar, or even sewing. Learning to do something from scratch gives you the greatest satisfaction. And there is an interesting photograph attached to this. First of all, we have some of Frank's masks with interesting fabric with skulls and monsters on. but he is also shown wearing, presumably a shirt he's made, which is basically white, with navy blue collar, pocket and cuffs, which have white polka dots on. Very impressive.
Carrying a crown to Winchester. On April the 23rd, the world celebrated the birthday of William Shakespeare, a man famous for the plays he wrote nearly 500 years ago. At 7 a.m. that day, the artistic director of Winchester's Blue Apple Theatre stood outside the Royal Shakespeare Company's in Stratford-upon-Avon with his racing bike, holding in his hand a golden crown on loan from the Royal Shakespeare Company. Richard challenged himself to take the crown to Winchester by bike to the actor who will play Macbeth in Blue Apple's July production. At 57, such a long ride in one day was a challenge for Richard, and by 130 kilometres he was feeling the strain, reporting in, "We're doing well, but it's tiring." He kept going and arrived outside Theatre Royal Winchester for the coronation just before 7 p.m. The actor wearing the crown will be Laurie Morris, who has been performing with Blue Apple since 2009. Having previously played Lysander in Blue Apple's performance of A Midsummer Night's Dream, and a few years later Claudius in Hamlet, Laurie is delighted to now have the chance to play his favourite Shakespeare character, saying, "I have actually seen quite a lot of versions of Macbeth. I think the best thing about Macbeth is that it's very moving. It's a tragedy." Richard's cycle ride was not only a mission to deliver a crown, but also to raise funds for a production that will showcase the talents and passions of performers with a learning disability. It'll give Blue Apple's cast the chance to step on stage with the professional support of a creative team of set and lighting design, audio-visual artists, musician and costume designer. Blue Apple supports performers who have learning difficulties to dance, to act, to sing, and to make films to a high standard. The theatre company provides opportunities that are not usually available to these performers. And so far, £1,467 has been raised, and to donate, there's a website to go to.
Very good. The Jesus Myth tops book chart. The honorary chaplain at Winchester University, Chris Scott, has released a new book. The Jesus Myth was published on March the 25th. Published by John Hunt, Publishing of Alresford, it is currently number 4 in the Amazon Faith category and number 1 in the Hot New Release category. Chris said, "The book is about looking at the nature of myth, not as something untrue, but rather as a story that carries profound truth. I also explore the notion of myths we all carry within ourselves about who we are and what life is like. Myths that we often have to modify or discard to become fulfilled human beings. I've also recently joined Humanists UK and would call myself a Christian humanist. I point out that the language of the Bible is primarily of the Bronze and Iron Ages, and accordingly, the understanding is also of that time. It is hardly surprising that the churches are emptying when we are offering a diet of concepts originating in much more primitive times." The Jesus Myth is a short book written in a style that is easily accessible. One reviewer said, "Whilst this book may appear small, be assured it packs a punch."
Now for something completely different. Itchin Valley councillors clear rubbish. Parish councillors in the upper Itchin Valley have rolled up their sleeves to clear rubbish. Detritus from an illegal encampment has blighted Itchin Wood for many a year. Old fridges, a TV, rusting scrap metal, tyres, shoes, carpets, and plastic drink and food containers are just some of the items that can be seen at this beauty spot in Itchin Valley's Parish Council's area. Councillors gathered on Sunday and the clean-up took 2 hours and resulted in an overflowing trailer load of rubbish. The rubbish could not be disposed of immediately due to the restrictive rules on car registrations and trailers at Hampshire County Council's Household Waste and Recycling Centre in Alresford. The chairman of the Environmental Working Group, Councillor Steve Percy from Easton, said, "We're an energetic group that is keen to make a difference for our residents by direct action. I'd like to thank all those that gave up their Sunday morning to finally rid us of this dangerous and unsightly mess." And there is a good photo. Councillors Chris Jeff, Steve Andrews and David Wolfe with their wheelbarrow and their dogs, sleeves rolled up and removing the rubbish from the site.
Hampshire woman hails phenomenal firefighters. A woman has praised firefighters for their phenomenal response after a blaze threatened to destroy her home. More than 60 firefighters were called to tackle the fire at Gemma Miller's thatched property in Durley, near Bishop's Waltham, when a spark from the chimney set the roof alight, shortly after 8 o'clock on Friday evening of March the 25th, while she and her family were at home. Having lived in a thatched house for nearly 17 years, Gemma says she'd always taken care to keep the house safe, fearing the impact of a fire. But the family have since said they feel fortunate after the quick actions of crews prevented the fire from spreading. The Millers had been unaware that there was anything wrong until the alarm was raised by two BT engineers who'd spotted a flickering light coming from the roof. Within minutes of the 999 call, fire crews were at the scene in Parsonage Lane, and at the height of the incident, 12 fire engines were in attendance. It had been a warm day and all the heating had been off, but it was a really cold night and it was freezing in the house, so we put the fire on, said Gemma. At about 7:45 o'clock, there was this bang on the door, and then my husband, who answered it, shouted, "The roof's on fire!" Two BT guys had phoned the fire service and then banged on our door. They were in the right place at the right time. The Millers had installed a fire-retardant liner across the whole roof during an earlier renovation, following the advice from the fire service, and had always made sure their chimney was swept and had smoke alarms throughout the property, including the loft. Group manager John Amos said, "We know that thatched roof fires have the potential to cause massive amounts of damage, not just to the roof, but in many cases to the rest of the house as well. The fire retardant liner did its job, and we were really pleased to be able to see this beautiful property saved and the family able to go back in that night."
Here is a memorial correction in the Chronicle. The Chronicle on April the 14th got details wrong on a report of the unveiling of a memorial to 33 servicemen killed in an air crash during World War II. A Stirling bomber was towing a Horsa glider on a pre-D-Day exercise in April 1944. We reported that the Stirling crashed into a tree to the east of Warnford Park, killing all 27 soldiers on board. In fact, the Stirling hit a tree near Warnford Park, but it was the Horsa glider that crashed in Warnford Park, killing all 27 on board. The Stirling struggled on, but crashed near Romsey, killing the 6 aircrew. We apologise for the error from a press release, but not spotted in the editing process. Mm-hmm.
Now, something a little bit more happy. Businesses team up with Rotary for Ukraine. Now, I'm going to start by telling you about the pictures, which are really lovely, happy pictures. There are people who are selling pies. There are people who are selling cakes, people who are selling jewellery, and people who are dealing with hair and beauty, all proudly holding up their Rotary certificate. Winchester Rotary has commended the generosity of city residents and business owners after raising thousands of pounds for Ukraine through two high street appeals. Members have been out on the high street twice in recent weeks collecting donations for the Ukraine appeal. The first collection raised almost £4,000, which was doubled by the club's own funds and meant that £8,000 was sent to the appeal set up by Rotary International. MIF said, "The compassion shown by all the sectors of our community, and especially our vibrant independent business sector, is really commendable. Through supporting this Rotary initiative, we can ensure that the funds raised will be 100% going to those who need help. Independent businesses who would like to host a collection box can obtain one by emailing media@winchester-rotary.org. Online donations can also be made here, cafdonate.cafonline.org/19995.
Winchester Member of Parliament attends Wessex Group of Dignity. The local Wessex Group of Dignity and Dying had a well-attended meeting on March the 31st with the Winchester Member of Parliament Steve Brine visiting as a guest. The organisation campaigns to change the law to allow a choice of an assisted death for the terminally ill and mentally competent. More than 100 signatures gathered at the Winchester Christmas Market requested Mr. Brine to come to a meeting, while several local people shared their stories of loved ones dying in pain and suffering because of the inadequacy of the current law. A topic of conversation was about the 300 suicides a year that occur with terminal illness, the 1 in 14 people who die without getting adequate pain relief, those that go to Dignitas to die, and those that refuse to eat or drink to bring an end to their suffering. Several doctors were present, and one spoke explaining that the current level of medical treatment available meant that fewer people were dying as they did in the past. More deaths now occur slowly, and with multiple conditions that mean that the level of palliative care available is not always enough to allow them the dignified death they want. Mr. Brine voted against the last assisted dying legislation, the Maris Bill, in 2015, and the Dignity in Dying group said they were keen to understand if his position had changed. It was pointed out that the main GP organisations were no longer against assisted dying, and over 250 million people worldwide have access to some form of assisted dying. Apparently, Scotland, Ireland and Jersey are on their way to allowing this choice. A spokesman for the group said, after much discussion, Mr. Grine agreed he would support a further parliamentary debate, but he was not able to say whether his personal view had changed. He took away the research documents that should allow him to assess all the evidence that supports the view held apparently by 84% of the public, which is to allow an assisted dying law. To support a change in the law, people can sign a petition or join the local group. The petition is at petition.parliament.uk/petitions/604383.
Anger after voters pay to collect leaflets. Residents in Wickham have been left unimpressed and out of pocket after a candidate sent them his election material using fake stamps. The stamps were bought on Amazon and have left Winchester City Council candidate George Madgwick facing a bill of hundreds of pounds and the potential for lost votes after their use was refused by Royal Mail. About 200 letters were sent to postal voters in the city, as well as in the Meon Valley, using first-class stamps. Recipients were asked to pay £2.50 in unpaid postage fees to unknowingly collect the pamphlets. Some have taken to social media to share their disapproval. A member of Facebook group Wickham, a Hampshire community, said, "Lots of Wickham residents have had this. Won't be getting my vote." Another said, "Doesn't promote confidence." Another said, "Do not pay. I had one too. Sadly, I paid £2.50 for the privilege of a pamphlet from this joker." Mr. Madgwick, a businessman who runs restaurant in Knowle and Cosham, has already attracted attention this election as he has been criticised for standing in two wards. He is a councillor on Portsmouth City Council, but is now standing for election in the neighbouring Wickham and Southwark wards for Winchester City Council. However, he was criticised by other candidates when he said that Paulsgrove in Cosham would remain his priority if elected. Mr Medwick said the fake stamps had not been spotted when they were used as part of a group effort by the Portsmouth Independence Party to post more than 1,000 letters ahead of the postal voting deadline. Talking to the local democracy service, he said they were bought on Amazon. The listing had good reviews, and as far as we could tell, they were perfectly legitimate. They were even more expensive than they would have been at the post office. After we first noticed the issue, we noticed there had been complaints in February that they were selling fakes, and yet they were not removed. We've contacted Amazon, and I've been less than impressed with their response. The stamps are still listed for sale by the retail giant, with a rating of 4.6 stars out of 5, although the majority of recent reviews raise issues with their legitimacy. A spokesman for Amazon said the stamps had now been removed from its website. The authenticity of products on our store is a top priority. We encourage customers with concerns to report them to us so that we can investigate and take action. Fewer than 0.01% of all products sold on Amazon receive a counterfeit complaint.
Wizard of Oz panto tickets to go on sale. Tickets for this year's panto will go on sale soon. The Wizard of Oz, this year's traditional family pantomime at Theatre Royal Winchester, will go on general sale on May the 10th at 10 a.m. The Wizard of Oz will be produced by the same creative team behind the last few pantomimes at the venue. Writer, lyricist and director James Barry and composer Simon Slater. The panto will run from December the 3rd to January the 2nd. A spokesperson said, "This partnership was nominated for their original musical score for Beauty and the Beast in the Great British Pantomime Awards Musical Achievement Award. James Barry was also nominated for Best Script in the Great British Pantomime Awards for his script of Dick Whittington. Alongside the professional cast will be a supporting cast of local young performers. It's full of original songs, corny jokes, and lots of our audience participation. The Wizard of Oz promises to be a spectacular production. Tickets are available from the theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk address or call 01962 840 440 from May the 10th.
Return to duty of a police constable support officer. I think that's what it's the initials stand for. Oh, it's a police community support officer. A police community support officer has made his return to patrolling Winchester City Centre after a serious injury. In October, PCS O'Neill Parker was the victim of a serious attack in Silver Hill. And now, after 5 months away, his colleagues have welcomed him back. A post on Winchester Police's Facebook page says, "You may remember a post back in October about one of our PCSOs in the city being assaulted. This is PCSO Parker. He's been on our team for 14 years this year and has finally made his return from injury and will be joining PCSO Warn out on patrol for the first time in 5 months. The team are thrilled to have him back and look forward to having him back where he belongs, on the High Street in Winchester."
Pub reopens after an £80,000 refurb. A Winchester pub with views of the cathedral has reopened after undergoing an £80,000 renovation. This is the second upgrade for the William Walker in the square since 2016, where £500,000 was spent by owners Fulham. The new look William Walker reopened its doors on the 1st of April, and Deputy Manager Mitch Parker said the punters have been enjoying its eclectic mix of William Walker memorabilia with its historical yet modern style. William Walker was a deep-sea diver who was called in to help the cathedral in the early 1900s when huge cracks started to appear in its walls. Walker worked underground in water to shore up the foundations of the building for 6 years. The pub's swing arm is a diver's helmet and is one of an array of unusual features scattered throughout the venue. Mitch said the refurb has helped make things look great and showcase things like the venue's beautiful brass top bar, which is surrounded by ornate tiling. Trading has been different over the past year and a half, but now things are going back to normal a little bit more. So we thought we'd go off with a bang in 2022 and get everything sorted. Spending around £80,000, the pub, which boasts 55 seats for drinking and dining, brushed up on the decor to keep things looking fresh while installing new artwork, flooring, paint and furniture. The team also used the opportunity to upgrade the menu. Head chef Phil Headley has put together a menu that brings together seasonal ingredients in light, fresh dishes, traditional classics and hearty grills, while also delivering sharing and snacking plates. We've introduced eating while you're drinking, so we put high tables by the bar where customers can order bar board selections with homemade Scotch eggs, porch scratchings and sausage rolls that are made fresh daily.
Three good causes in Winchester benefit from cash grants. Three local charities will benefit from the charitable work of a Winchester-based investment company. Gentian Developments has announced financial support for three charities that operate in the city to enable them to deliver support to more people in Winchester. Each charity was chosen because the service it provides and will receive £3,000 a year for the next 2 years. Homeless charity Winchester Beacon, Winchester Young Carers and Move Momentum, an inclusive dance class, will all benefit from this money. Managing Director Nick Elkins said, "Following our significant investment in Winchester's High Street, we wanted to ensure that we also gave back to the local community. We hope our financial support will enable these charities to continue their vital work for people in Winchester." Gentian's headquarters are at the top of Winchester High Street in Trafalgar House. It has investments across the UK and has made a significant investment in Winchester, purchasing 4 retail properties in the High Street in the last year. Gentian is also a sponsor of Winchester Rugby Football Club and has previously sponsored Hampshire Pride.
And that's all we have for you this week. Please return the memory stick in the plastic wallet as soon as you have finished with it. Thanks to this week's editors, Sue Gunaway and Jane Thomas. And thanks to all the other volunteers who prepare, copy and dispatch our recordings to you. Goodbye from us, Heather.
Goodbye.
Paul.
Farewell now.
Frieda.
Goodbye.
And me, Noel Thorpe Tracy. I hope you stay safe and well and have really nice weather to enjoy. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.